Hello, everyone. I'm Pulkit Mishra from Duke University. Today, I'll talk about how we harvest pair server resources for building data center scale distributed file systems. Our solution has actually been deployed across 30,000 servers in Microsoft data centers, and in this talk, I'll also share some of the lessons that we learned from this deployment. This work was done while I was an intern at Microsoft Research. So today's data centers are underutilized. We have seen this behavior at Microsoft, and Google has actually published some numbers along the same lines, where they say that the average utilization is around 30%. Now, the reason for this low utilization is that the servers are over-provisioned, both in terms of compute and storage. This over-provisioning helps handle peak loads and provide low-tail latencies for applications. Now, there has been prior work that has looked at harvesting these spare server resources by co-locating latency-critical services with low-priority bad jobs that help improve the utilization of these servers. For example, at Microsoft, we co-locate latency-critical Bing search with low-priority MapReduce jobs in order to improve the utilization of our servers. However, till now, this harvesting has been performed at a small scale, and now we seek to enable data center-wide harvesting. A key challenge towards this end is to scale the distributed file systems in order to stream the data to these bad jobs. Let's see why this is the challenge. So these bad jobs operate on a massive amount of data, and to handle this capacity demand, we need bigger file systems. However, horizontally scaling file systems by simply adding more servers to it starts hitting a bottleneck due to the centralized design of these systems. Now, most distributed file systems, including HDFS and from what we know of GFS, have a centralized metadata manager. This manager administers the namespace and handles all initial file requests for open, append, write, etc. And although this approach helps simplify the design and maintenance of the file system, but the manager starts becoming a bottleneck as we add more servers and as more applications start using the file system. From production deployment, we have seen that the manager starts saturating the system at around 40,000 requests per second, as you can see in the graph on the bottom right. Now, in addition to mitigating the bottlenecks imposed by the metadata manager, we also need to consider the dynamics of the co-located services inside these resource harvesting data centers. Now, the interactive services like Skype, Bing, and Azure are the primary tenants and actually own the servers on which they run. Our bad jobs and our file systems are actually just trying to harvest the spare resources from these primary tenants. And we want to do it in such a way that there is no impact on the performance of the primary tenants. Therefore, we have some safeguards that protect these primary tenants, and these safeguards actually end up imposing a couple of challenges on our file system. The first challenge is that we fail accesses on servers wherein the primary tenant CPU utilization is higher than some threshold. From the file system's perspective, this would lead to failed accesses, and if accesses of all replicas fail, then this lowers the availability of the file system. And moreover, the primary tenants can reimage at will the disks of the servers that they own. Now, from the file system's perspective, this has an impact on the durability because if all replicas of a block are reimaged in the same time frame, then this leads to a data loss and would lead to lower durability. Now, we can use smart techniques like place replicas across different primary tenants, as has been proposed in prior work, but we still need to make sure that our file system has enough diversity in terms of primary tenant servers to take advantage of such techniques. To tackle these challenges, we looked at a couple of state-of-the-art techniques for scaling file systems for inspiration. One such approach is the VUFS way of doing things, where we run small independent subclusters that host a portion of the namespace. This approach, as we are running independent subclusters, the metadata manager is not a bottleneck. However, the users are presented a partitioned view of the namespace. Now, the user might just place all their data inside a single subcluster or a few subclusters, and this end up causing the subclusters to become unbalanced. We could balance these subclusters by performing some manual rebalancing to move the data around to balance the clusters, but this is very complex because we also need to push all these operations back to the user because they need to understand where the data is stored. An optimization here could be that we provide a global view of the namespace to the users and push all this complex rebalancing under the hood in the background. On the opposite end, another approach to scaling is that we create one giant instance of the file system that spans the entire data center, and we have multiple strongly consistent metadata managers. Now, this approach does provide a global view of the namespace to the users, but this system is highly complex. And from past experiences in the production, we have seen that simpler systems that also perform well are much more preferable. Moreover, any software failures, bugs, or operator mistakes have a higher collateral because the system does not provide any isolation. An optimization here could be that we run small independent subclusters and therefore have isolation from any failures, as has been highlighted in prior work. So seeing the challenges and learning from the optimization points of existing approaches, we defined the following goals for our project. First, we want to scale file systems to entire data centers, but with the flexibility of running small independent subclusters and therefore provide isolation from errors. Moreover, we want to also federate these subclusters transparently in order to provide a global view of the namespace to the users. Second, we want to run our file system on harvested resources, and this involves promoting behavioral diversity inside the subclusters because we want to provide high durability and availability. And finally, we want to provide good performance for the users, and this involves ensuring that the subclusters are balanced both in terms of load and capacity. Now I'll describe our solution. It's called Data Center Harvesting File System. I'll talk about the components at a high level, then I'll describe them in a little more detail in the subsequent slides. So first, we divide the servers inside our data center into subclusters. These subclusters are small, so the metadata managers do not impose a bottleneck. And while creating these subclusters, we also try to promote behavioral diversity inside them. Next, we federate these subclusters using a layer of routers. These routers help provide an illusion of a global namespace to the users. Third, we have a state store that stores the global namespace. And finally, we have a rebalancer that helps ensure that our subclusters are balanced. Now let's see how a user request is handled inside a system. Say we have a user who wants to read a file, and now in a typical distributed file system, this request would be sent to the metadata manager that translates the file part to the storage server on which the file is stored. But in our system, this request is intercepted by the routers, and the routers may now consult the state store for translating the file part to the subcluster in which the file is stored. Now, since these translations are mostly static, the routers can cache these translations to reduce the latency of these operations. The router then contacts the metadata manager of the subcluster, and the metadata manager resolves the file part to the storage server. The router finally returns this information back to the user, and now the user can directly open a stream to the storage server and start reading the file. Now, as you can see, our solution supports efficient federation. We provide a global view of the namespace to the users using a very thin layer of indirection. And we also allow running small independent subclusters and therefore provide isolation from errors. Now I'll describe techniques that enable our solution. I'll first talk about how we transparently scale file systems. We have two components for this. First is the state store. The state store is responsible for maintaining the state of the federation. It has a mount table, which is the global namespace, which you can see in the figure on the right, where the colors correspond to the subclusters on which the data resides. When we are trying to resolve a path to a subcluster, we try to find the lowest common ancestor for that path, which is mapped in the mount table. For example, if you are trying to map a child of apps, then it belongs to the same subcluster to which apps belongs, which is subcluster 1. In addition to mount table, the state store also has the aggregated access load and capacity metrics for the global namespace, and this information is used at the time of rebalancing. Finally, the state store has the router and the rebalancer state, and this is used for providing fault tolerance and ensuring consistency. The second component for transparent scaling is routers. These routers help provide an illusion of the global namespace to the users. They translate the file part to a storage server and may consult the state store for determining which subcluster in which the file resides. And they also cache these frequently accessed path translations I had mentioned before for reducing the latency of these operations. Next, I'll describe how we enable running our solution on harvested resources. So for efficient resource harvesting, our prior work has shown that we need to exploit the diversity of the primary tenants in order to provide high durability and availability for a file system. When we initially started working on this, the policy of the administrators at Microsoft was to manually assign groups of primary tenants to subclusters. The figure on the right shows an example of the diversity inside a subclusters using this manual assignment, where the color corresponds to the primary tenants. And as you can see, we only have four primary tenants inside a subcluster consisting of 4,000 servers. Now, say the blue primary tenant is Bing, and on election day, there's a load spike, and all these servers are unavailable. So the file system now just has half the servers available and maybe the same load to handle, right? So these requests are handled by the remaining half, and this might end up causing a load spike on the remaining servers as well. And now our safeguard mechanisms start to kick in to prevent the primary tenants from violating their service level agreements. And now, a lot more servers for the file system are unavailable, and this has a dramatic impact on the availability of the file system. So therefore, we need diversity in terms of primary tenant CPU utilization and reimage behaviors to to provide high durability and availability. And unfortunately, this approach does not give us that. Our solution to this was using consistent hashing, where we hash racks to subclusters. Our approach has several advantages. First is that the randomization due to consistent hashing allows us to promote diverse inter-insider subclusters, as you can see in the figure on the bottom right, where we now have much more primary tenants inside a subcluster. It also helps us to promote network locality because we are hashing racks to subclusters. And finally, consistent hashing helps us to reduce the amount of data moved in the event of addition or removal of subclusters. Finally, let's describe how we provide good performance for the users. We use rebalancing for this purpose, but since rebalancing is an expensive operation, we only want to do this if some subcluster starts becoming a bottleneck. Therefore, we define watermarks for this purpose and perform rebalancing only if the aggregated load or capacity metric for some subcluster is greater than the watermark. To do this efficiently, we model rebalancing as a minimization problem, which tries to minimize across four dimensions. First is use capacity, where we try to have the use capacity on any subcluster to be less than 80% of the total available capacity. Next is access load, where we want a subcluster's access load to be less than 40,000 requests per second over any 5-minute period. Third is we want to balance any unbalanced subclusters in such a way that we move the least amount of data possible in order to balance that. And finally, we want to make such migrations that also helps us to constrain the size of our mount table. Now let's see an example of rebalancing. The figure shows the global mount table, where the color corresponds to the subcluster to which the folder and its children reside, and it also has the aggregated load and capacity metrics. The rebalancer gets this information from the state store and calculates the aggregated metrics for each of the subclusters. And based on it, it determines that subcluster 1 is overloaded, where the access load is around 60,000 requests per second, which is greater than our watermark. Now it solves the minimization problem to determine what folders it needs to move in order to balance subcluster 1. And it determines that it needs to move these two folders. Now we could have moved these folders to any of the three subclusters, but then this would have probably helped us to balance the subclusters, but not reduce the size of the mount table. But if we move this to subcluster 3, then we end up balancing our subcluster 1. The request rate is now 35,000 requests per second on subcluster 1. And in the process, we also reduce the size of a mount table, and therefore synchronizing this across the routers is much easier. We implemented our federation techniques on top of HDFS, and our solution is called Data Center Harvesting HDFS. In terms of structure and behavior, HDFS is like a typical distributed file system. It consists of a centralized metadata manager called the name node, and the data is stored on the data nodes. Now, since we are running HDFS on harvested resources, we leverage diversity-aware replica placement in order to improve the durability and availability of HDFS. And finally, we run independent instances of HDFS inside the subclusters. Next, we federate these subclusters using a layer of routers, and these routers are placed behind load balancers, and the HDFS client is configured to use this load balancer as the name node. Third, we leverage the strong consistency and high availability guarantees of ZooKeeper to implement a state store. And finally, our rebalancer is run as a MapReduce job, where each task corresponds to moving one file. We use a real servers for our evaluation, where our deployment consists of 4,000 servers that are spread across four subclusters. We also deployed our code in production. Our deployment consists of 30,000 servers that are spread across four data centers. We learned many valuable lessons from this deployment, and I'll share some of these with you in this talk. We also performed large-scale simulation based on the traces that we received from production data centers at Microsoft. Through these simulations, we simulate full data centers for 6 months, including the behaviors of the primary tenants, the data center harvesting HDFS, and we try to understand from these simulations the advantages of our server-to-subcluster assignment policy and also a rebalancing policy. Finally, we also simulate real-world workload based on the traces that we received from Yahoo. These traces contain around 700,000 files and 4 million accesses along with their timestamps. We replay these traces and also accelerate them in order to create different access scenarios. Now, in our first experiment, we evaluate the availability of our solution compared to the baseline. The baseline is created by assigning groups of primary tenants to subclusters. And in this experiment, we also tweak the workloads of the primary tenants to create three groups of data centers with different kinds of primary tenant CPU utilization. Now, in the case where the primary tenants have a CPU utilization of up to 25%, both systems perform well and have 7/9 of availability. Now, in a more realistic case where the primary tenant CPU utilization is up to 50%, Now, this is where our solution really shines and has 5 orders of magnitude higher availability compared to the baseline. And finally, in the case of high utilization, now this case poses the maximum challenge to the availability of a file system. And over here as well, our solution has 4 orders of magnitude higher availability compared to the baseline system. These results show the advantages of our approach for assigning servers to subclusters. And our solution also helps improve the durability of the file system. But for these results, please refer to our paper. In our next experiment, we evaluate the performance of our routers. In this experiment, we focus on the worst case scenario where the workload only consists of metadata operations. The results are shown in the graph, where on the x-axis, we plot the throughput in thousands of requests per second, and on the y-axis, we plot the average latency in milliseconds. There are a few takeaways from this graph. The first is that when we switch from one named node to 4 named nodes, the throughput scales almost linearly from around 40,000 requests per second that I had shown before to around 160,000 requests per second. Now, when we add routers on top of this, the routers on an average add 3 milliseconds of latency to the client operations, and they drop the throughput by around 12% from 170,000 requests per second to 150,000 requests per second. Now, given that in any real-world workload, the block read latencies from data nodes would dominate, from this experiment, we conclude that our routers are efficient, and they add very little latency to the operations of the client. In our final experiment, we evaluate the performance of our rebalancer. We replay the Yahoo traces for this purpose, and our watermark is set to 2,000 requests per second over any 5-minute period. The results are shown in the graph, where on the x-axis, we have the time, and on the y-axis, we have the request rate per subcluster. The only takeaway from this graph really is that we have subcluster 0 that is overloaded where its request rate is greater than the watermark. To balance subcluster 0, we had to move 13 terabytes of data, and over multiple runs, we made several key observations. First was that on an average, it takes around 6 minutes to balance subcluster 0. Out of that 6 minutes, it took a very small fraction of 100 milliseconds to solve our minimization problem and to determine what data to move in order to balance subcluster 0. And the bulk of the time was actually spent in transferring this data. From this experiment, we concluded that our rebalancer is efficient, but the primary tenant's activity has a great impact on the migration time, where we saw impact as much as up to 4x, where the data transfer time increased from 6 minutes to up to 24 minutes. To reap the benefits from data center harvesting HDFS, we recently deployed it in production. Our deployment consists of 30,000 servers that are spread across 4 data centers. We learned many valuable lessons from this deployment. I'll share some of these with you today. And for the remaining, please refer to our paper. The first lesson that we learned rather painfully was that when we switched from manually assigning servers to subclusters to using consistent hashing. Now, this caused a lot of servers to switch their subclusters. And in the process, we had to also move the data that was stored on those subclusters. This data transfer dramatically increased the network traffic and also incurred long downtimes for the co-located services, the primary tenants that actually owned the servers. So to reduce this interference, we had to actually restrict the movement of servers till they were either re-imaged or decommissioned by the primary tenants. The next lesson that we learned that was even with data center harvesting HDFS, there were some bad jobs that were having trouble in storing all the data inside a single subcluster. And in the process, they were also overloading the metadata managers. Now, one simple solution to this problem could have been that we just spread the data around across different folders and different subclusters, but the users of these bad jobs wanted all their data inside a single subcluster, in a single folder. To accommodate this demand, what we had to do was we created special folders wherein the data of this folder was distributed across subclusters using consistent hashing. This consistent hashing approach actually helped us to randomize the load across subclusters by randomly assigning files to the different subclusters. To conclude, in this work, I talk about techniques for scaling file systems to entire data centers. Our solution is called data center harvesting HDFS. Our approach allows running independent subclusters and therefore provides isolation from errors. We also federate these subclusters transparently and therefore provide a global view of the namespace to the users. Through thorough evaluation, we show that our techniques help improve the durability and availability of the file system on harvested resources. And a rebalancer helps improve the file system performance. We also deployed our solution in production. Our production deployment consists of 30,000 servers, and I shared some of the lessons that we learned from this deployment. Thank you.
Yeah. Josefata La Fastly, could you go back to the slide where you have the routers, the state caches?
Sure.
I'm curious, how do you do rebalancing? How do you, because there are some sources of truth, one in a cluster, there is the cache that needs to be updated, purged, or invalidated. How do you synchronize that?
Can you repeat? I'm actually having trouble understanding.
Okay.
So in the larger scale, when we have...
If you go back to this, it's like slide 5 or so in your in the request flow.
Okay, the...
Yeah, I'm curious how you how the transaction goes when you have to rebalance.
Over here?
Yes. Yeah, right. So the metadata managers need to hand over information. The state store needs to be updated.
Yes.
And if there are caches in the routers, they need to be invalidated.
So
how do you make that transaction
work? So when we are trying to rebalance, the rebalancer gets the information from the state store as to what data it needs to move. Then it actually, what it does is it locks the namespace.
It locks
the namespace. Prevents making changes to the namespace, but the reads and writes can still go on. And then once the data transfer is done, there might be more writes that have happened, so we try to copy whatever is remaining, and then the final step is really when we log the namespace, change it to be part of the new subcluster where the data was moved, and then just we unlock, and then the operations can go on, then the users can change the path names or anything that can happen afterwards.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Niklas Semmler, TU Berlin. Just a general question, how did you replicate the data in the setup?
It's three-way replication, so each block
is stored on three replicas.
No, it's in the same subcluster, yes. So each HDFS instance is running independently on a subcluster, so we define where the file is stored, but then within a subcluster, the blocks are stored across servers within the same subcluster.
Okay.
And that's why we need the diversity, because if you try to store all your replicas in the same kind of primary tenant, then it might impact the performance of your file system.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you for your great talk. And I'd like to know how to back up and how to snapshot of a metadata in case of your approach. Because metadata is distributed to subclusters.
Yes.
In that case, is it hard to take global snapshot about the metadata
The metadata that we maintain is the mount table that I had shown before. So this is the metadata that is maintained. The figure on the right is the global metadata that is maintained. And this is the only thing that we need to synchronize across the routers. And the children of any of these folders don't need to be mapped because they belong to the same subcluster as the parents do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question or?
Is it hard to keep the consistency between the node?
The consistency,
yeah.
You'll have to worry about consistency under a few scenarios. The mm-hmm. first would be that when you're rebalancing,
yeah.
when you're moving things around, do you have to perform the same things that I had mentioned before, that we lock the namespace, the portion of the namespace that we are modifying?
Mm-hmm.
The lock only means that you cannot modify anything what the path corresponds to, but you can still continue reads and write operations.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we are trying to actually perform the migration, when the data transfer is done, we just switch, like if we are trying to move apps to a different subcluster, that's when we just make the mapping that apps now belongs to, say, subcluster 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only operation that is blocked and under a lock. And after that, and then we synchronize it across our routers using ZooKeeper. And then once that is done, this is the only critical path of our rebalancing process and synchronizing metadata.
Right. I see. Thank you.
Hi, Sumit from Credit Karma. Mm-hmm. Do you now store all the tenant data in one cluster, or it is now spread out?
It's spread out across all the subclusters.
Okay.